Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Janelle Grant's attorneys file a new motion. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, ice cold thoughts on Bad Blood and a preview of Wrestle Dream, and then Invader Club from Slamboree 97, Ultimo Dragon, not the Ultimate Dragon, versus Steven Regal.
Well, it not just depends on who you're Steven asking. Regal.
Yeah, that's true. It gets a little... Oh, it was one of those things on the internet that drove people nuts. Oh, by the way, I'm Jeff Hawkins. This is Chris Novembrino. Back from sabbatical, back from being on assignment. His video just shut off. It's back on now.
Well, Jeffrey, I was trying to... not offend the gods of YouTube. I'm outside once again, offending the gods of YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's that kind of cigarette.
It's a regular. Are we supposed to call them like smoky bad sticks?
Yes, or, I think that's exactly what the YouTube algorithm will do. In addition to copyright striking.
Really?
Thanks again to Warren Hayes for filling in for Chris last week. How was the move, all things considered? Because there's no such thing as a good move.
Impressive if you think about the pace. Within like 3.5 days, I was basically settled in here. And then the last several days here, I've just been finishing up what still needs to be done at the old house and meeting with the contractor to start so he can start doing work on everything that needs to be done in the house. Yes.
Was this a friends help you move or we hired professionals?
This was me and my roommate did it with a little bit of help from my girlfriend's friends.
Beer and pizza then?
Yeah, essentially. Like, dude had a van. dude had a really, really large van that we were able to get pretty much everything into. Like, my king-size mattress is like the largest thing. And everything else was less than that, so I was sore as all get out. I was basically like paralyzed on my cot on Friday night after the umpteenth time moving things to and fro, but better now, better.
Yeah, it's interesting as you get older. I have found the magic of hiring people to move instead of asking friends. I just once you get a certain age, everybody's like, I'm too old to do it, I'm too sore and I'm pissed, don't ask me.
Yeah, but the money I didn't spend on that, I came in way under budget on what I had set aside for the move, so I then was able to put that into home expenses that were on the nice to have list, like upgrading the vacuum cleaner and thing. You know, the vacuum cleaner was close to the end of the life cycle.
Oh, I'll tell you something. A Dyson is worth the investment.
Bro, yeah. I just got a really good Bissell and
those are good too.
Yeah, a good high end Bissell, and I'm liking it a lot. It's got some heft to it. Like, you can feel the power. And the other thing I really like is it's got this little like LED light, so you can see what's on the floor and just kind of, oh, did I miss a spot? I can catch it.
Bagless?
No, it's got the, well, yeah, okay. I mean, it's got the, you know, the center thingy.
But it's got like a container in the center as opposed to like actual vacuum bags, which.
Oh, yeah, no vacuum bag. Okay, no cool, vacuum
cool,
bag.
Cool, yeah, cool, cool. And then you got a good one.
No, I like it a lot. I actually just for shits and giggles, vacuumed the rug that I have out here today, and it looks way better than an outside rug should right now. I'm proud. I'm taking pride in home ownership, Jeffrey.
Well, at least the internet's back too, so you can do shows again. That's nice.
Oh yeah, yeah. So get this. I here's a pro tip for all you shake them ropesers out there. I believe that's your preferred terminology.
Is it?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's I think that's what they're saying in the Discord these days. I'm a shake them ropeser. Don't call me a shake them roper. That's not the preferred nomenclature, Chris. I hear these things. So I am on the horn with my quality internet provider. Let's avoid naming any names to protect all the companies here.
Does it rhyme with rectum?
No, okay. It does not. It rhymes with Sexfinity. And I was on the phone with Sexfinity.
Okay.
Talking to them, and I told them that I was moving to a new location. And I, because you know, you go through the robot phase of the call, and then if you're so lucky to survive the robot assault, then you get sent to the international call center. Because I'm on the international call center, I am not able to give I tell them what's going on, that I'm moving, and they're like, oh, everything's going to be totally fine, don't worry. I'm like, okay, cool. I get over here, and I'm trying to hook up my router and get everything going. Should have been a piece of cake. Should have been done on Thursday. And the router's up. Everything's working fine, but I'm not connecting to the internet. And it's searching. I can't find it. We're still in the middle of the move, but I really want to get this internet thing resolved because I'm trying to teach lessons in addition to doing a podcast beloved by thousands every week about professional wrestling. I'm trying to get my internet up and running, and nothing I'm doing with the troubleshooting's work. I'm once again going through the robot phone line over and over and over again. I do this for about 5 hours, finally get on the phone with somebody, and I'm like, look, we have tried everything. I've done everything. I've sat on the line with you guys for hours. I need you guys to just send out a frigging technician. Well, then they finally send out a frigging technician here. The guy, nice guy, lovely guy, gave me a useful piece of advice. That's coming here at the end. He tells me that this place has never had Sexfinity internet connection at any point in its lifespan, which is something that the good people at Sexfinity, or a company that rhymes with that name, should be able to share informationally amongst one another, so that when I call and say, hey, I need the internet set up at this house, instead of me going over like a goober and trying to plug in cords that don't go to anything, that a technician would just come over in the first place. And what I learned is, if you ever get into one of these Stunlock situations with a company, perhaps Sexfinity themselves, or a company that rhymes with that name, the move here is to say that you want to cancel your service entirely, and then you'll be put on a domestic call center and speaking with someone who completely understands your problems, and the people in the cancellation center are completely capable of handling everything. So your trick, your pro tip from your old buddy Chris, if you want to beat the robots, is say, I want to cancel my service, and you will speak to a human once again.
True. That happened with me with DirecTV. Starting off the news, Janelle Grant's attorney filed a motion asking them not to enforce non-disclosure agreements with former and current employees and contractors so they can potentially come forward with similar accusations. Attorneys emailed a letter making the request late Monday to attorneys representing WWE, Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, a former WWE executive and wrestler, in Grant's lawsuit against them. From the attorneys, quote, if WWE and its parent company Endeavor are serious about parting ways with Vince McMahon and the toxic workplace culture he created, their executive should have no problem with releasing former WWE employees from their NDAs, Ann Callis, Grant's attorney, said in a statement. This is the first step to rehabilitating a company that covered up decades of sexual assault and human trafficking, And wouldn't you know it, Chris, an editorial in USA Today from a writer there coincided with this talking about how WWE should not have NDAs, and in order to move on from that, look, I know a lot of people are analyzing this as something big. This is lawyer games, pure and simple.
Oh, yeah, I don't think this moves the needle for WWE, the company. This has absolutely no bearing on the stock price.
This entire court case isn't going on yet because the feds are investigating Vince. So Ann Callis is trying to keep herself in the news. That is what is happening here, to the most part. You can't get rid of non-disclosure agreements, all of them, because there are trade secrets and other things in there in addition to the other stuff that you want. I also think that this ploy of, oh, you know what, if you just come clean, everything will be okay. Nope, there's liability involved in that, Chris, if you come clean. Yeah,
okay, so I think you've actually got my gears turning a little bit on the idea that maybe what needs to ultimately happen at a litigation, like federal litigation or legislative level, is something that limits what non-disclosure agreements can and cannot cover.
Yes.
That the idea of a blanket non-disclosure agreement is not valid.
I'd be fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, you can protect trade secrets, but not sexual assault.
Correct. Yeah. There needs to be different kinds of NDAs, much like there's different kinds of contracts type of a thing for just to come out and go, you know, NDA should be illegal. Well,
no, I think, right. Like, they have some sort of function, but clearly there's a problem that has been identified, that they cannot be blanket NDAs, that you have a right to protect your trade secrets, but not to protect criminal activities.
But Ann Callis, as I've said before, is a bit of a political animal. She's run for higher office. I think she wants to use this to catapult herself a little bit. And also, this case, nothing's happening in this case for, I think, at least 6 months, if not a year, because the feds have told everybody to stand down. But we're getting these documentaries, and we're getting people talking in the zeitgeist about Mr. McMahon. So Ann Callis is basically interjecting and doing motions. And there's nothing wrong with these motions. Like, sometimes they work. They often don't. Like when you ask for, like, a summary judgment in a case, you know, motion for summary judgment denied. It's usually that, you know, that kind of thing where it's like, they didn't prove their case. Give me a summary judgment. The judge just kind of looks at you annoyingly and goes, no.
No, but, okay, so from her standpoint, given the relationship between Vince and Trump, which is just extremely well documented, you can look at any number of alternative sources to whatever.
Oh, Linda McMahon's going to be in the cabinet if he wins.
Right. So I could see her thinking it might behoove her client to try to move this case along and get it going before the Trump DOJ takes over.
They can't, because the feds have already said, you guys stand down, et cetera.
No, I know, but she's trying to do things to move this case.
I get that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it behooves her to try.
I find the interesting plea for, absolution for the company interesting. Because there is a bit of a schism between Triple H and Endeavor and Vince McMahon. But I don't think they're indemnified. McMahon and Laurinaitis are indemnified together. That's a joint representation type of deal. But WWE, I think, has its own lawyers. But I think the problem with coming out and getting those NDAs out there and saying, no, it's only McMahon and Laurinaitis is such a, there's no play there where that can come off, because there has to be something in there about the corporate culture or something that would then eventually go back to make WWE liable, I would think.
Human
Resources was told about something and they didn't do something about it. And that would, you know, there might be a cash settlement involved with that, which I think is a lot of the point of a lot of motions, to be honest with you. But yeah, I just don't see anywhere where Endeavor like Endeavor's attorneys, I think, are probably a little bit better than the WWE attorneys used to be. Although the WWE attorneys were quite good.
Yeah, I was going to say McDivitt
was fantastic. He's just the kind of oily scumbag one needs, you know, in these types of.
He was the criminal attorney that Vince McMahon needed.
Oh yes,
like a Saul Goodman.
Oh, he was made for the moment, and he was good at his job. I'm not saying he wasn't good at his job. Knew what the laws were, got the laws written the way he wanted to, and yeah. So I'll be interested to see this, but I don't think for those of you who are listening to like post wrestling and stuff like that, WWE's not budging on this. They know what's going on.
This is a lawyer trick. They're not touching this. I watched that coverage as well. I mean, I find the whole thing interesting.
It's interesting, and but it's full of sound and fury.
Right. Certainly seeing the map. It's important for us as journalists, too, to also always be able to separate what is proven in court is not the same as what's been proven historically.
Yes. Although, do you consider yourself a journalist?
I don't know.
Are you Sean Ross Sapp now? Is that $5 a month? Novembrito Select. $5.
Okay. Look, let me walk that shit back because I haven't tried to do that in a minute. But, like, look, we're a news source in the sense that people literally listen to this section of the show for news coverage and analysis.
True.
So, and we're on Voices of Wrestling, which people listen to, I've been told.
I've been told that, yes.
I'm told that. So, I mean, you know, like, look, I think it's just always important to differentiate between those two things. Just because something's not proven in a court of law doesn't mean that for the sake of historical reporting or historical discussion that you can't then discuss it. Like, Vince McMahon committed sexual assault doesn't need to be proven in court for us to have a strong enough body of evidence where like the opposing debate side would look ridiculous trying to argue to the contrary.
I'm sorry, Mr. November, you did not prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt on your podcast, therefore it's not true.
Right. Those non-disclosure agreements could have been for anything.
Oh, we're so getting
no trend there.
When we make the break from Voices, we're getting total NDAs. Because all those bodies that we know are buried. Never mind.
Oh, man.
Brian Alvarez, friend of the show, provided an extended health update on Killswitch Luchasaurus during yesterday's Wrestling Observer Live. I don't know if you heard about this, Chris, but Warren and I went over this.
See, we are a news source.
He went to the hospital with pneumonia in both lungs. I think both his lungs collapsed. He just got sick all of a sudden and got to the hospital. But here's what Brian had to say. I don't want to say it's a career-ending issue, but it could be a career-ending issue. He's not back in the gym, and he will not be back in the gym for a while, and he's not going to be back wrestling probably for a while. Hopefully he'll be back wrestling in a while.
All those years of hanging out with Meltzer have made him have expert command of the language.
This was on radio, and this is transcripted. So, yeah, you have to forgive that. Apparently, there were complications. He ends up getting this flu and bad oxygen uptake as a result of whatever else. It turned into pneumonia, and apparently he's at high risk for a relapse, is what I was told. The big concern is that after all this, they've been running test after test, and apparently there may be permanent damage. They found calcification in a heart valve, and his body is not producing iron, and so he's got a whole bunch of tests that he apparently has to take. It's bad. It's bad enough that he's out of the hospital, apparently, but he still has to do oxygen, unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, jeez. That's just unfortunate for the guy. You know, he really clearly tried his ass off to make the second phase of his career more successful than the Lucha Underground phase of his career. And I really hate the idea that his career is ending like this without, I think, the potential ever fully being realized.
Right. And I think that singles run may have done it. I don't know for a fact because the AEW faithful are a little fickle on such things, but it would have been cool to see, you know, once he breaks off from Christian, what he could have done.
Right. People were really ready for that singles run and that turn at the pay-per-view that they didn't do.
There was an incident at the NXT hotel on Tuesday night, yeah, a man was allegedly caught trying to take photos of the feet of female talent as they made their way through the hotel, and it was ejected not once, but twice from the location. Chris, I don't understand foot fetishes, I don't kink shame, but a message to the wrestling fans, don't go to hotels, don't go to airports, don't be a creep. How about that?
Respect people's feet, people.
Feet of the female talent, what are you doing? I don't know if you saw this because you're not on a lot of social media, but WWE is trying guerrilla marketing on angles and whatnot. Because in the aftermath of Bad Blood, Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes got into a fight in the parking lot where, you know, there's loading and unloading and the fans can kind of see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and they alluded to it on Monday Night Raw, but they didn't say it.
Yeah, no, I saw the footage in question. It's so convenient the fan had such a steady hand.
Yeah, there might have been they could have called it the greenhouse because I think there were a few plants in there who had a little bit better equipment to record it. But what do you think of such things? There, I mean, we often say everything should be on television, and I assume it will be eventually shown on television. But just to get the buzz leading up to television. Is that a
good thing? I don't mind it, and okay. I think it's all part of WWE kind of thinking about world building in all the various beats. I like doing it with a main event angle. Yeah, so yeah. I find the Raw portion of WWE's universe to be very well-rounded right now. Things tend to matter. It's the SmackDown side that tends to be a little all over the place.
Owens and Rhodes are SmackDown, though.
Yeah, Owens and Rhodes. With the exception of Owens. I knew what I was about to say.
I got you. Ratings, the only thing that matters. It was head-to-head night for at least an hour. NXT, 874,000 viewers. AEW Dynamite, 329,000. I will say this. If you're going to call something Title Tuesday, maybe it's a good idea to build up some title matches for a few weeks and keep plugging that it's going to be Title Tuesday in a few weeks as opposed to just the week before the show. That's all I'm saying. Because I know a lot of people who were like, why isn't AEW on tonight? Not realizing that baseball was going to be on. Chris, are WWE fans allowed to take a victory lap over this one, or is this
hell yeah.
I
got no sympathy for AEW fans right now, and here's why. We, as fans, sort of established this idea that the bad old days of Vince McMahon writing a show from week to week with no coherent direction of where things are going and booking on the fly, rewriting the show sometimes as close as 1 hour prior. These were bad things. This did not result in good TV. This was not maximizing the talent on the TV screen. And Tony Khan has fallen in to one of the worst trappings of Vince McMahon in the late stages.
And that
this is what... This when you don't actually what I just said okay. when you don't actually book ahead, you're booking okay, gotcha. 1 week in advance. You're like you're writing these angles in an extremely short period of time. Maybe we do 1 week build, maybe we do a 2 week build.
Chris, that one's on me because I was listening to the tone of what you were saying and not actually listening to what you were saying. So it was like it's set up for the point and I was waiting for the point, and that's my fault. So don't sweat it. I was just getting my notes in front of me so I could talk. I'm sorry.
No, you're all right. You're all right. But yeah, this is my qualm with AEW TV right now is that they don't know where they're going with this shit. They have a
few qualms as well. And I'll,
right. Yeah. I mean, the Moxley thing, you know, just as like a cherry pick here real quick. They've had 3 weeks now to figure out what the hell they're doing with Jon Moxley. And I don't understand this angle any better now than I did 2 weeks ago.
This will be a good segue into the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we saw, because my response to this is, they have a big problem in almost all their angles with baby faces. Number one, most of their angles right now are, we have a group of people and there's dissension and somebody's turning. In every single stable, somebody's turning on them, which is already a problem. But AEW's babyface roster, in terms of guys you can get behind who are pure, is bad, because it's one of those things where, like, Bryan Danielson is apparently a problem within AEW to making the wrestlers in AEW happy, and that's why the Blackpool Combat Club is turning on him. Darby Allin is doing, you know, remember win segments with Brody King, who he's already feuded with three different times, and then hitting him in the face with a rock. He's the baby face. Willow Nightingale's a nihilist. Orange Cassidy doesn't care. Whatever, whenever. You know, we don't have any pure good people. And Orange Cassidy has also shown heelish tendencies of late. So it's one of those things where it's like, who's pure? Will Ospreay is still hanging around he's now kind of out, but he was hanging around Don Callis the past couple weeks.
Yeah, I'd find.
Oh, and for Darby, one extra point is Brody King's entire promo was, you're self-destructive, and you're bad. And what happens after this? It's like, okay, great. So all these baby faces are terrible for the company, and the company's the heel, kind of. It's so disjointed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Darby Allin line that continues to bother me is when he described himself as one of the pillars of this company, which just found me scratching my head. Like, dude, you went from having a world title shot to having a clearly mid-card feud against a guy with no belt.
You are the dumbest man alive. You're
an idiot.
John Moxley.
An elective feud. It is dropping out of your IB course to go and take an elective.
Oh, by the way, Darby, Danielson won't be here, so you got to fight me. Okay. And then later Nigel comes out. Yeah, I'm fighting Bryan Danielson. Huh? And now Wheeler Yuta, who I thought might be the mastermind behind this whole thing, they've done they're doing the Luger Wyndham turn without the benefit of planting the seeds a year early, to my knowledge. When J.J. Dillon came out and goes, someday you're going to go to the corner and Luger's not going to be there for you. But that entire end segment was Danielson celebrating and Wheeler Yuta just pawing at his boot. He's so going to be the cause of Danielson leaving. But we'll get to the Wrestle Dream in a moment. Bad Blood thoughts. Chris, I thought it was a one-match show, but the one match was very, very good.
Yes, the one match, obviously, Punk and McIntyre, extremely good. Credit to Punk for putting on a Hell in a Cell that stayed inside the cell.
Yes,
not depend heavily on high-risk maneuvers. I think, you know, we maybe got to the plunder a little too quickly here. But when we're talking about not actually leaving the cell, 100%, I just supported that. The one thing that I found annoying, it's just the WWE move, is I didn't need the beads at the end of the third one. Like, I think, if anything, McIntyre should have pulled out the bracelet and Punk should have just slapped that away and said, it's way beyond that now. Like, we're beyond the bracelet at this point.
Yeah, the obvious symbolism of the beads, that's a little too on the nose. It'd be like pulling out, like, his dead dog or something.
Right.
Which WWE has done before, the dead dog angle. But, it's a little too on the nose for me, but I agree. I just liked the simplicity of two guys having a fight in the cell without trying to figure out a reason to leave the cell. I thought that was so, because I'm tired of, like, oh, he broke the lock. Oh, somebody came up from under in the ring. Somebody, and they're fighting on top of the cell, and they're, you know,
they're looking for the crash pad to go on to and things like that. It just made it so much better. And the actual offense within the cell, this wasn't a wrestle. This was a lot of kick, punch, and throws. And I thought that made it good too. You know, the blood notwithstanding, because God, Drew took some shots in there. The Claymore kick into the steps where he hit his back in there and he missed. The toolbox to the head was something. I mean, this was. I watched.
It's funny. Sometimes they do these plunder matches because they think it'll quote unquote be easier on their bodies. But then I watch spots like this and I go, man, if you take that stair spot bad, or you get that toolbox bad, I think I'd much rather just take a Brock Lesnar German suplex. Thank you very much.
But I was just so happy watching this because at the end I went, yes, that was a fight in a cell. That gave me the stipulation. And that's all I wanted. And the other matches were just nothing but focus being drawn away from the main characters to further story, which is kind of the B pay-per-view thing. Although the last third of the main event, where Cody just decides to jump off a pole through a table, I mean, all that was really good. It was really well done. And it got the crowd hyped, especially for The Rock coming back. But like the two Judgment Day matches in between.
Man, I thought those... Nothing. They killed both the Terror Twins. Rhea Ripley, though, to me, I think really got hurt by this match in the sense that she had... I hated everything about the finish of this match. I got to go off here. I could go off on other finishes, but I'm going to just kind of keep this one a little narrow and just stick to this one. So the story between Rhea and Liv is that Liv Morgan came and took everything away from Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley's title, Rhea Ripley's dipsy boyfriend, and Rhea Ripley's faction. Like, Rhea Ripley lost all these things, but the other part of the story is, with the exception of the title, she didn't need the dipsy boyfriend. She didn't need the Judgment Day. And what ultimately she needed was like a little bit of self-realization. And what she needs in order to redeem herself here is not to get back with Dominic, but to get back her title. So, cut to the end of this very long feud that has been going on between Rhea and Liv, one where Rhea has finally gotten Liv all alone with Dominic Mysterio up in a shark cage, who has just turned into the little henchman. And she has the title won. Liv Morgan is laid out. She chooses not to pin Liv Morgan and instead to go out and beat up on her ex-boyfriend, who is a loser. But Jeff, I gotta stop here because we haven't even... That would be the dumbest person in the scene, but it is in fact only the second dumbest person in the scene. The second dumbest person in the scene is the NPC ref, who forgets what his job is and decides that, one, he has a preferred outcome for who's going to win this match. Two, he's going to express what that preferred outcome is. And three, he was going to encourage the participant in the match to go and do something that has nothing to do with the match right now. Like, if a fan said, hey, Rhea Ripley, you've got an ugly nose. It makes your face lopsided. The referee is not supposed to stop and be like, Rhea, he shouldn't have said that. Go out there and do what you need to. Like that, the referee's job is literally to always advise, stay on the match. Stay on the match. Like, whether or not the referee thinks the kid out in the audience is a jerk or Dominic Mysterio is a creep, the referee's job is to always encourage the participants to stay focused on the match. Oh. But instead, our referee says, Jeffrey, you deserve it. deserve it.
Dopey camera on. Yeah, this could have been resolved very easily by just having Liv continually berate and shove the attorney the referee, and maybe almost go to that line where she's getting disqualified, and the ref just looks at Liv at Rhea and goes, "Go ahead, I don't care." Or something like that, where he's so pissed off and having a bad day.
He walks off.
And then the heel color guy can go ape about how he's not being, oh, you're not being nonpartisan, what's your problem, blah 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 blah, and then the baby face play-by-play can go, well, look, everybody, you know, you don't have to take crap at your job.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
The man was trying to call it down the middle.
Yes.
And Dominic Mysterio would not stop antagonizing him the entire match.
Or like, Liv. Either one.
Because you need to justify why Rhea would go and beat up Dominic Mysterio, who is not a participant in the match. So, like, Dominic would have to be saying things like, you're a little nerd. I hate you. You've got an ugly face. Your camera looks dumb.
My other favorite part of this is the fact that we can't say that Dominic Mysterio looks like a piñata hanging from there, because that might be racially insensitive. When it's obvious, that's what the spot is. Because she goes, it's my birthday. She goes out there with a kendo stick. I think, did she make a joke or not about, I don't see any candy or something?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, there's no candy coming out.
So we're doing the entire thing, and we can't say on commentary, hitting him like a piñata, because, oh, I love her modern days, but nevertheless. But, I mean, it wasn't offensive stuff in between. It was just there. But let's go.
Right, I don't know that. I like Liv. Rhea and Liv don't have great chemistry, and I think that...
Yes.
I mean, the other big problem here is all these gimmicky matches, I think, have prevented Rhea and Liv from actually sitting down and figuring out what a Rhea and Liv match needs to look like.
Well, yeah, and
she's
and...
the undersized heel going up against the powerhouse babyface. So what that means is that every one of these matches needs to feature some sort of spot where Liv establishes her advantage or strategy early.
Well, yes, and we also then on the Yang side of that, we also need to explain what a Nia Jax match is, because if you've heard of a Hurricane Rana, this was a Nia Can't Rana, because she tried to pull one of those off. And Bayley was just getting the crap kicked out of her, trying to carry her to a decent match. We've said that Nia's improved, but not that night. That was some tough sledding watching that other women's match.
Yeah, no, it wasn't great. I will say I'm impressed by her mobility still. Yes. Even in a bad match, Nia's bad matches now look better than her bad matches did in the past. And so if we're going bad match to bad match, you can still see the improvement, but this was still a bad match.
Let's get any other WWE main roster notes out of the way. Raw, I loved Pete Dunne and Sheamus, but I don't know what we do with Pete Dunne. He's never going to be a main event guy. Sheamus is sneaky good, and I used to not like him a lot, but he's been solid in all these things.
I mean, you know, the moniker's well-earned. Sheamus just, to me, screams perennial upper mid-carder. Like, Sheamus versus Gunther match is always going to be at a certain level of work. Sheamus does always bring a certain level of work, you know, a good 3.5 stars to everyone.
And Sammy and Gunther could wrestle forever. I don't care. Right. They're so good.
Well, and, you know, Sammy, Sheamus, and Gunther would be a fun triple threat.
Yeah. No, that's actually true. Anything else on Raw that...
You know what? Kate Carter and Katana Chance are done for me. Yeah. I'm over them. Zelina Vega needs to go back to being a manager. She stinks as like an in-ring talent.
That 10-person was
oh boy,
nothing burger. But
a real who cares of the women's division right now.
There's a who's who, and this one was a who cares. I still enjoy... Karrion Kross doing his shtick with Miz. I think that was good. And there was another promo that shocked me that was good. Oh, the Woods stuff with Kofi that I think was on the Raw after show that made social media was really, he's doing some layers. I just don't know where it goes. I think that's the problem for me, is like a heel single Woods screams Pete Dunne on the other side for the most part. You know, it's like there's not a lot of upward mobility for Woods as a singles guy, unless he's a part of a crew.
That to me is the problem, right? Like, Woods as a singles guy, who does he feud against? You already did the Jey Uso feud, or you did the Jey Uso match at this point.
Yeah.
Woods, okay, here's what could be interesting, especially since Woods and Cody are both comic book nerds. You could do, after like Mania, a Woods villain arc where he starts kind of building up to be like Cody's new nemesis post-Mania.
Do you think people would buy that he could win the title?
I think that would be up to Cody and Woods to figure out how to tell that story.
Okay.
But, I mean, I think Cody has also had feuds with people so far where you don't necessarily think they're winning the title.
Yeah, I think as
like,
a kind of a...
I never thought Solo Sikoa was winning the title.
No. And I think, I think like as a head of a stable or something, or like even if he was in the Final Testament, I think he'd probably be good in that. I mean, he likes his anime. He can figure something out. I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I could see him as a Magneto type of guy.
Okay. Yeah.
The Magneto to Cody Rhodes' X-Men.
So Wrestle Dream over in AEW is happening.
our friend of the show, Pierre, is going to Wrestle Dream. And
oh, cool.
Hello to you, Pierre. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, there are things in there that are good. I'm just so terribly annoyed by how this company builds. And it's just, it's driven me nuts that this Bryan Danielson retirement possibility, I mean, it's been undercut by the fact that Bryan Danielson says, I'll never retire. Okay, so you're retiring from full-time possible wrestling.
But you got to applaud them for all of a sudden realizing that this Bryan Danielson has to retire if he ever loses a match. Stipulation's a stipulation that they stipulated.
Okay, sure. It's their match. I mean, not it's their match. It's their pay-per-view for me. Like Wrestle Dream used to be the big one where they bring in all the New Japan guys to wrestle AEW guys. And, oh, look, it's a dream matches, et cetera, et cetera. And they've run that so much into the ground. This is just kind of another pay-per-view that's there. Let's go into it.
Yeah, this, okay, stopping right here. This is where not having great stories building into some of those classic Wrestle Dream matches really starts to bite them in the ass longer term, which is that we just don't have those great Wrestle Dream moments building up. Remember that storyline where Okada came in or Naito came in and wrestled? Ha!
Hechicero or something?
Right. No, right? Like whatever. Right. And there was a really awesome build. Remember when Naito came on and that dynamite ended with Naito doing something to, yeah.
The fist up in the eye. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, right. Those moments in the builds make the pay-per-views and those pay-per-view quality matches things that stick out in the memory, too. Like when we remember the match, our vibes about the match are the match work, but also the match build.
Yeah, but I mean, they're turning people left and right. Like Jay White got no reaction on his cup because everybody forgot he was a babyface. Because he's been a babyface for a week. Because it was just like, oh, it's a convenient thing because the Bang Bang Gang all turned face all of a sudden because of who they were feuding with. You know, Chris Statlander's running down to make a save, and if you're not watching Collision, you don't know she turned babyface because they've just decided to. There was
What?
Oh, you don't know? Oh, you didn't see that then?
I don't watch Collision. No.
But it was on Dynamite. She came down and made the save for Emi Sakura, and with Camille because. Apparently, we are all supposed to know that there's been something that happened between Stokely and Chris, legit, and so they will no longer be paired with each other. So all of a sudden now, Chris Statlander's a babyface. And instead of actually doing something on television to explain this, they just decided to do it and not explain. So yes, Chris Statlander is now a babyface and on the same side as Willow Nightingale, who she just feuded with in a street fight. Yes.
Oh, so Stokely and Willow are donezo, huh?
Not Stokely and Willow. Well, that part of the field, but Stokely and Chris are done.
Interesting.
Atlantis Jr. versus Brian Cage on the 0 hour part of the show. Singles match for the ROH World Television Championship, because Atlantis Jr., by the way, is the Ring of Honor World Television Championship. Or champion. Hey, how about that? I will start with this one because you've seen this match before. If you've ever seen Brian Cage versus a luchador, Brian Cage is going to do a lot of feats of strength. He's going to try and catch a guy while he's at him, although I've heard Atlantis Jr. is not really an aerial guy, but I'm sure there will be an aerial move where Brian Cage tries to defy the laws of physics and either hits it or doesn't, and Brian Cage will lose. Do you have any opinion on this, Chris?
I have seen many Brian Cage matches, and this will be one of the Brian Cage yes. matches that I don't see.
I agree. In a singles match for the ROH World Championship, God of Promos, Mark Briscoe. And I mean that legitimately. Like, you weren't here last week to talk about the one with Jericho in the where Jericho invokes Jay and Mark just slugs him. There was no melodrama. There was no wrestling acting. Just immediate slug to the face. Mm-mm. And his entire demeanor changed. It was awesome. And then the follow-up on Wednesday, also awesome, where he almost sounded a little bit like Jay when he was serious. Versus Chris Jericho and that dumbass learning tree segment with Rocky Romero. Oh, God. Mark Briscoe cuts that awesome promo, and then they do a comedy segment with the learning tree, as opposed to Chris Jericho having watched the promo and maybe being a little scared of Mark Briscoe to put it over. My fear is Chris Jericho is going to be the ROH World Champion after this. Chris, what do you think?
God, I hate that, because this really should be the other way around, where Big Bill goes in for a match against Mark Briscoe, and he's really confident. And Jericho has to watch from the outside as Big Bill gets dismantled. The Redwood gets cut down limb from limb by Mark Briscoe. And Jericho's out there going, oh, God, he's a lunatic. Like, like Big Bill is like reaching out to Jericho for help. You know, save me, Father. And Jericho's just recoiling in disgust.
You know the other thing that will make Title Tuesday? This is going to be, I mean, we're lazy rivering it anyways. Everybody on a pay-per-view should be on the go-home show at least cutting a 30-second promo about the match that's going to be on Saturday or Sunday.
Well, right, and like the go-home show really should be, frankly, a lot less wrestling
yes.
and a lot more promos.
Hard sell the damn pay-per-view, guys.
Right, you know, we're going into this. You have one kind of killer main event, but the way at least I kind of remember it is the good wrestling on TV wrestling in the pay-per-view cycles was done usually on week two or week three in a 4 week build. The fourth week was not good. You had a non-decisive main event that was a teaser for whatever the pay-per-view was going to be and a bunch of talking. And that's what the fourth week should be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care about Commander versus Hologram. I really don't. I mean, I'd much rather have promos from everybody that's on this pay-per-view, but nevertheless. Darby Allin versus Brody King in a straight-up singles match. Who you got, Chris?
The fans win either way. I'm going to say Darby Allin wins.
The shindiest shindy of shindy matches on here after Darby Allin was pushed as a world title contender. Good God. In another odd one, Jack Perry versus Katsuyori Shibata for the TNT championship. Oh, and by the way, there's another segment that fell flat. The Daniel Garcia is re-signed with AEW, because that's where we wrestle. Chirp, chirp, chirp.
It just doesn't hold the water, because there's good wrestling on WWE now.
Well,
yeah, you know.
It's that. It's the fact that I think Garcia's still in this position, because he's not going to go into Tony Khan and go, hey, where do you see me this time next year? Well, what do you have for a plan for creative? And you kind of have to have your own pitches to get anywhere. I just – Oh, and by the way, Jericho beat Hook, and Jericho's on the pay-per-view, and Hook isn't. But nevertheless, Jack Perry versus Shibata. It's Perry, right? We're not giving this title.
It's got to be Perry. Yeah, it's Perry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Shibata's fine, but the phone gimmick only gets so far with American audiences. I think it's a comedy gimmick. A three-way for the AEW International Championship: Will Ospreay versus Ricochet versus Konosuke Takeshita. I didn't get your thoughts on the Ospreay Ricochet draw start over again, and then Takeshita comes and runs in and kills it for everybody to just be pissed. Takeshita's winning this over Ricochet, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like Takeshita wins. Like,
I do too.
This is the Takeshita vehicle. Yeah,
maybe, I don't know, but Ospreay pins Ricochet. That would be even worse. I don't know. I think
no. Takeshita pins Ospreay, but obviously, you know, like, not like in this dominant sort of way.
See, I don't think we free up Ospreay yet, because if we free up Ospreay, he has to go for the world title. And while I think Moxley Ospreay is good, I think there's other people that are going to be involved in that world title shot. But don't quote me on that. I can see Ospreay losing this. Don't get me wrong. And if he loses, it's going to be Takeshita. I don't see Ricochet being involved in this whatsoever in terms of actually getting the title. But the Young Bucks, Matthew Jackson and Nicholas Jackson, who were not on the go-home show, versus Private Party, Zay and Quinn, who were, and who yet again, for the second week running, cut a pretty good money promo. if there's one group that's improved on the stick, it's Private Party, but unfortunately, they're still where they are. I don't see a title change here, do you?
No.
It'd be an interesting choice.
It would be an interesting choice, but, like, there's just, I was about to say there's been no bill, but there's no bill for anything. I'm just going to say no,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, it's member berries. Hey, remember when we beat them 5 years ago? Now we're on a pay-per-view. Okay, hooray. Mariah May, your AEW Women's World Champion, versus Willow Nightingale in a makeup because Willow lost the CMLL title. That's what this is. But
Mariah May wins.
Yeah, and then Maya shows up probably, and maybe even Toni Storm. But see, that's the story everybody's waiting for. So yeah, I think this is just a placeholder. I think everybody's going to be way ahead of this match, unfortunately. So on 3 days, or actually maybe a week's build, because I think it was announced earlier, Hangman Adam Page, also not on the go-home show, versus Jay White in a straight-up singles match.
The fans win.
I'm gonna say Jay White wins when Swerve comes back and interferes with Adam Page.
Oh,
and
God.
It's the Chicken versus Peter Griffin. That's what this is.
Okay. Jay White wins. All right.
Yeah, because it's Swerve is scheduled to be on this show in some way or fashion, and I think it's going to be to screw Adam Page.
There you go.
And what I didn't expect to see on this lineup, but it's here, the MXM collection of Mansoor and Mason Madden versus the Acclaimed of Anthony Bowens and Max Caster. Might be sneaky good, might be sneaky bad, but who do you got?
I'm going to say the M&M win.
Okay. Mansoor's good. Mason's working on it. But I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say the Acclaimed win this one in what becomes a goofy match. And there's probably some daddy-ass shenanigans in there, too. In another match that I didn't see announced, but it's on here, so I'm going to say it, and it's going to be longer than I expected, Hologram, who got that win, versus the Beast Mordos in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Chris, the Beast Mordos has kind of been thrown in with a trade with Roosh and Dralistico, and they are now aligned with Jake Roberts because apparently they're a throw-in with Roosh's contract, and Roosh was given to him in exchange for Lance Archer joining the Callis family. Now, I love me a good heel talent exchange, but I believe there were people involved in this trade who aren't owned by anybody, but nevertheless, the Mordos has been getting a minor push with bull speak the last couple of weeks, which is interesting. But I love Mordos, but
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that it's a real testament to Don Callis' management ability that he's able to trade people that he doesn't even have contracts on. That takes real skill. Have you ever done that?
It will probably not be commented on either. Oh, yeah, Hologram's winning this, though. It'll be fun. Everybody will say, oh, it was a good four-quarter star match on my spreadsheet. And it won't mean anything because luchadors basically don't mean anything anymore.
No, they and this company doesn't build them. So, right. You know, yeah.
And then in your main event, Bryan Danielson takes on Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. This will be a story match. This will be contrived in many ways. It will be a little bit overbooked, I think, as well. It'll be a good match, though, too. Do you see any way that this is not Danielson's last full-time match?
Yeah, I think he beats Moxley.
Oh, do you? Yeah. I've heard he's had to have surgery, and that was leaked out there, but that might be a feint. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he beats Moxley.
I say Moxley wins and Yuta turns on Danielson and he's the cause of him going away. That'll do it for that. We got a few minutes. Quickly, NXT thoughts other than Javon Evans should have... Javon Evans is just apologizing frantically at the end of that NXT.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has to. It was a ballsy spot to set up for yourself in doing a spinning corkscrew into an RKO, but yeah. One that he had to be the architect and engineer of. I watched it. I got on the phone with my buddy Cody, and then after I got off the phone with him, I watched it. I slowed down the tape multiple times. I get to the point where I was watching Randy's facial expressions as the entire thing's happening. Like, I've analyzed this Zapruder film levels, right? Javon Evans is supposed to corkscrew and spin his neck the other way so that Randy Orton can catch him. And instead, he corkscrews into Orton so that they are side by side. Orton had no way of spinning to get there because Orton always has to catch the RKO off of his right arm. Like, he only does the RKO on one side. He had no way of really saving the spot here. Beyond that, though, I thought the match, like, Orton was selling his ass off, but Evans time and again sort of shows that he's indie-rific and not ready for prime time.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of... They put him in over his head, and they threw him in the deep end to see if he can swim, and he's not ready to swim just yet.
No, and when Ethan Page said it should be Ethan Page versus Randy Orton in the main event, I'm like, hell yeah, that'd be a great match. You're kidding me? I love that. It builds up to Randy Orton hitting Ethan Page with the RKO after Page hits a bunch of cool-looking power offense. I'm into that. Absolutely.
Although, fascinating that Randy Orton has become the conciliatory veteran who's saying, it's okay, as opposed to, you and I both remember when Kofi Kingston messed up something. Stupid!
I know, and this was much more egregious than when Kofi Kingston, when that spot didn't go bad. Like, this is 100% Javon Evans' stupid. Other thoughts on NXT. Sexy Red, I've said it before, I will say it again, is one of the least talented people of any genre I have ever seen on WWE TV. Here's the thing, Jeff, about some musicians, right? They say that some musicians can only do it in the studio, but they can't do it live, right? You're hearing that more and more these days. These musicians, these kids these days, they hide behind the bebop machines and the pitch correction, and they can do it in the studio, but they can't do it live. Here's what I'm going to say about Sexy Red. She can't do it in the studio, and she can't do it live.
WWE needs to figure out how to embrace the hip-hop culture that they want to so bad by pointing out all these rappers and stuff, because they come out so white. They all through the Bad Blood show, Michael Cole came off as the most Caucasian-y Caucasian of all Caucasians, talking about Killer Mike and other guys involved in the Atlanta raps.
They would have been better off having Killer Mike up there than Sexy Red.
No, that's true too. But
beyond that, it's Marble Mouse. I like, you can't understand what she's saying.
The tag match was good. The women's six person was decent, I thought. you know, it was a good show for them, and it was, you know, it was a good crowd in St. Louis. We'll see how what happens when they come back. You got a heart out here in a couple minutes, so tell me about.
No,
oh, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I just want to say this. I think at this point, Javon Evans, I'm very over this kid. I think he's a nice. No, straight up, dude. Hear me out.
I am hearing you out.
Okay. There are a lot of more talented people that I have seen come across my TV screen over the last 5 to 7 years who have gotten far fewer chances than Javon Evans has to rise to the occasion. Now, has he been put in too deep? Absolutely. But the reality is, as I watch this kid, he's not a good promo. All of his punches and kick offense looks like crap. And the one thing that is saving him right now is an insane vertical leap. But if that insane vertical leap can't even deliver in a reliable way for spots, then of what use is it? He is Evan Bourne without all the meddlesome charisma. He is, you know, Kofi Kingston without the charm. Like, this is just a guy. I think that WWE... NXT would be better spent putting the developmental rockets on somebody else at this point. They've tried with him. It didn't work out.
Tell me about Regal versus Ultimo Dragon.
Regal versus Ultimo Dragon. I wanted a little bit of a palate cleanser here. And one of the things that I think people kind of forget about with WCW, I don't forget about, but maybe it gets talked a little bit less about the good stuff. It's always the cruiserweights, right? But the television title division oftentimes had a lot of sleeper good matches because they knew exactly what the length of the match was going to be. So these guys would pace themselves very well and have really nice energy in the closing stretches of the matches. The closing 3 to 4 minutes were usually really nice, solid, really nice, solid stretches. Ultimo Dragon and Steve Regal, I don't think are constrained by a time limit or is like the pay-per-view different where it's like 20 minutes on a pay-per-view? Is that the rule?
I think so. I think that's the rules. I mean, it's generally...
It's like 12 minutes on TV and then 20 on a pay-per-view?
I think it's like 15 on TV and like 30 on a pay-per-view or something. This would be one of those evolving stories that they would do because the TV title was originally not supposed to be defended on pay-per-views because it was a television title. But then they said, well, pay-per-views are on television, and then they just give them more time for as a more main event feel. But I believe this one was a 30-minute time limit.
Yeah, and Ultimo Dragon and Steve Regal that get a good 15-18 here to really shine throughout this match. We get a really nice diversity of offense. Everything from Regal pulling off some power moves like a front suplex to Ultimo Dragon doing some high flying moves, doing a Dragon Rana off the top ropes, to some really quality submission wrestling, to a variety of kicks from Ultimo Dragon.
The kicks are what stood out to me because that's what got this crowd really going, were those thunderous kicks. I think this was a Baltimore crowd. Was it Slamboree 97? But yeah, the kicks, when you heard them, and even like Dusty, who's on commentary, like, oh my God, kind of a thing. And that's when everything started to heat up and get going.
Yeah, even despite that, I think it was Baltimore. It was definitely or it might have been North Carolina. It's one of the heel crowds.
Yes.
Because they're all out there cheering for Regal to win this match, which is hilarious. And to the point where even commentary is like, I've never heard anyone cheer for Regal before. What is going on here? Dusty has some incredible spots on commentary during this match where he appears to just ramble in a series of sentences, one that does not connect to the next, that does not connect to the next, that does not connect to the next for about 30 seconds.
But this is also why Tanay's out there, so that because he's the only guy who's ever watched Lucha in his life, and Dusty's still going, the Ultimate Dragon!
Dude, I try to write down if you want a fun challenge, do the Dusty Rhodes challenge and try to write down some of the sentences that he says during this match and see if the beginnings and the ends make any sense to you when you finally put a period on them. Dusty's a trip. Ultimately, in this match, Sonny Ono turns on Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah.
Sonny Ono is trying to help cheat. Ultimo Dragon doesn't want the help, and Sonny Ono gets pissed off and then kicks Ultimo Dragon in the back of the head, which allows Regal to get the Regal stretch. But the other spot that I really liked in this match was the fake finish, where we got into a closing stretch of the match around the 10-minute mark, because this was going about 15, 16. And around that 10-minute mark, they did what really felt like a good closing sequence. Ultimo Dragon goes off the top rope for a moonsault, and that opens him up to get put into the Regal stretch. And he seems really, really, really vulnerable. And Regal gets him into the stretch, and Dragon fights out. But, I mean, the way they built this up, you know, we had a couple of near falls leading into this. This looked like it was going to be the end. And I think that's an important lesson. After you do a big near fall spot like this, you got to do a big breakaway from the ring. The in-ring reaction has to kind of like pause, and y'all need to migrate outside, because whoever just took the near fall has to be legitimately worried that they just got nearly pinned or nearly submitted. Right. That like, and oftentimes I see, and this is WWE and AEW, we do a 2.9 count, and then the guy gets back up like, oh, okay, that's fine. But it's not. You almost just lost the match.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this period's still when WCW is fun, before it's all falling apart. This is when everybody, like, mid-card feuds would still be getting over with crowds at pay-per-views, and the NWO isn't quite the overpowering cinnamon that it would become later.
Right. Yeah. Like they eventually just, I mean, overtake everything. I even like the little commentary beat that Tanay had on why Regal's not interested in the world title. And it's because Hogan and the spray painting on the belt and everything just sort of, in his opinion, sullied the belt.
He's an honest thief. He's a criminal, yeah, with morals. Yeah. I always kind of like those kind of like little touches to explain things as well. I think next week, since you missed Fire and Ice, I think we're gonna get Steiners versus Doom from Capital Combat or something like that.
So, oh, that's a fun one. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that. I think I got that one right. It's one of the ones that I've already watched, but I need to figure out which one's the correct one, because I watched about 12 of them. Yeah, you gotta go, so get your plugs in here.
All right, Chris Del Vibrino is on Spotify. Open or to go to Spotify, search Chris Del Vibrino, listen to my music. There's more in the works. It will be out like late November, early December. I did a ton of tracking. The original plan was to get it all out like this month, but like then I started the move, and once I step away from a project, once I get back in it, I always find new things that I want to do, and I kind of wanted to find new things. So go and check out the music that I've already got up there. There's 8 tracks, probably 4 or 5 more. I think 4 more behind that in the not so distant future. So like, subscribe for more content. Follow me on Instagram. And if you want guitar lessons, hit me up.
You can follow Chris on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. You can follow me on X @CrapGame13. You can follow just the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We're a part of Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show called The Dynamite Show on Fight Game Media. It's on their feed. It also goes 20 minutes after Dynamite Live on YouTube, but it drops in your feed the next day. Myself and Paul Fontaine doing a thorough deconstruction of that night's Dynamite. We will see you next week.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if 2 people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.